You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Cadet. This week marks the 25th anniversary of wolf reintroduction into Yellowstone National Park and Central Idaho. It was January 1995 when the first Canadian wolves came across the border. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service brought more wolves in 1996. Bringing wolves back resulted in heated debate and multiple lawsuits. Ranchers feared for their livestock. Wolf supporters celebrated their return. I covered this story as a very young reporter in eastern Idaho. In fact, my very first story that I got assigned to was going up to central Idaho where they were releasing those wolves. With us today live in studio to talk about 25 years of wolves back in Idaho and Yellowstone are Suzanne Stone with the Wood River Wolf Project and Rocky Barker, special correspondent to the Idaho Statesman. Welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gemma.
So, Suzanne, let's start with you. 25 years ago, you were there when these first four wolves came to Idaho. As soon as they crossed the state border, they were blessed by the Nez Perce tribal elders. So describe that scene as they came into the Gem State.
So they were actually met by the Nez Perce elders in Great Falls, Montana, where they first landed on their way down from Alberta. They were captured near Hinton, Alberta, and released and then moved down to the Great Falls to be transported by truck then to Salmon, Idaho, where we waited for them. The Nez Perce elders that were there took the first four wolves and did a blessing ceremony for those wolves. And it must have been a pretty good one because one of those wolves ended up being the longest living wolf that we know of in the western region. So he lived to be 13 years old. His name was Chat Chat, and it meant older brother in Nez Perce.
So I was there when they released the first four wolves covering this in Salmon, Idaho, not knowing where Salmon, Idaho was. All I know is it was snowy. There was snow everywhere. And they were releasing, literally releasing these wolves. And you actually released the third wolf.
The third wolf, yes.
What was that like?
It was unexpected. I didn't know that I was going to get to do that. But I, it was just amazing to be able to see the start of something that would change the course of history. I had, howled with wolves in the backcountry in Idaho before, but that pack of wolves, once we found them in early 1991, was poisoned. And so wolves really didn't get a foothold on their recovery in Idaho until the reintroduction actually occurred and they had, the protection in place to be able to support them.
So, Rocky, where were you 25 years ago when the wolves came back to Idaho?
I was with you, Gemma.
We didn't know each other then.
We were at the end of the road there at Corn Creek.
Yes.
And the road was icy.
Yeah.
It was an amazing moment in history for me. The wolves had been in those darn cages for way too long. And sitting there, the fish and wildlife people were doing anything. We've got to get these wolves out of there. And they, but sitting there, not only was Suzanne and her and the supporters, but there was a whole group of folks. Do you remember? They were ranchers.
Mm-hmm.
There were some lion hunters. There were county commissioners. There were, the sheriff was there, Brett Barcelo. And so, And they were all very interested in this moment. It was, I mean, it's not like they liked it, but they, how could you not be interested in watching these wolves come out of those cages for the first time into wild Idaho?
So the pro-wolf, anti-wolf sentiment came to a head just days after those wolves were brought in. One wolf was found shot to death next to a dead calf on a salmon ranch. Now, this was what ranchers had feared. So Rocky, how did ranchers, but not just ranchers, but people who lived in that area, react to this return?
They didn't like it. They didn't want it. They felt like it was rammed down their throat. They had sued to stop it, and some of them were actively shooting wolves. But see, the thing is, they were actively shooting wolves before the reintroduction, and that was really the thing that made the reintroduction necessary in the minds of the officials and people like Suzanne. So, all of this kind of played off of each other, and it when Gene Hussey's calf was found dead, it sparked the continuing strong feelings that have calmed down over 25 years.
They've calmed down over 25 years, but it seems to be an ongoing conversation, in fact, ongoing lawsuits. So there have been many of them. So would both of you kind of give us just a brief idea of the legal and the political battles that have really followed this in the last 25 years?
I think the biggest one was for the delisting of wolves in the region, so removing federal protection from them. And the biggest concern from the pro-wolf side was that wolves would lose so much protection that they would the states would then turn around and really hurt their populations. And from the anti-wolf side, that they felt like any more than, you know, the 10 or 12 packs of wolves that they had agreed to were just too many. So you had people on both sides that really looked at it as, you know, one wanting full recovery of wolves and the other one wanting to have just the most lowest skeletal number of wolves possible because they didn't trust having wolves back on the landscape. And that all came to a head in 2009, 2010, and actually 2011, over a three-year period where the pro-wolf folks won the first round, and then the Fish and Wildlife Service went back out, tried to do it again to delist wolves, and it ended up with Congress then stripping federal protection for wolves from in Idaho and in Montana, and then a few years later doing the same thing in Wyoming. So it was pretty complicated, but it was quite a dramatic unfolding
So let's go to 2018. This is when Fish and Game estimated there were 90 packs of wolves in Idaho. So where do we stand today when it comes to wolf recovery and the Endangered Species Act?
Well, they had 5 years after delisting that the federal government monitored the situation, and we are now past that. So it's now in the hands of the state of Idaho, and they are, you know, they're in charge. And, you know, there's still disputes. There's still lots of disputes going on about where wolves should be, how many wolves should be killed. You know, Suzanne runs a really wonderful program up in Wood River Valley that helps people live with wolves, who helps ranchers live with wolves. But there's other ranchers who just don't believe that can happen. And so those kind of disputes go on. But the wolves themselves are, you know, this amazing animal has many of the disputes or the biological issues that were going on in Yellowstone didn't happen mm-hmm. in Idaho because we have such good territory for them. We have all that wild country in the middle of the state, and the wolves continue to do well despite, you know, everything we throw at them.
So I want to talk about cost versus benefit here. So, Suzanne, you've written about how wolves bring in tourist dollars here to the state. In Rocky, in 2018, wolves killed more than 100 cows and calves and sheep. So that's a financial loss for each animal, and it can affect other stock in the herd. So what is this, you know, cost versus benefit?
So the real cost for wolves on the ground is very minimal, especially to the ranching community. You know, if you look at the number of livestock that are lost versus how many livestock we have in the state, wolves affect about 0.04% of the livestock here. But it is a very strong emotional issue. And I think that's what, you know, people normally have that visceral reaction. They don't want it. They didn't want to have wolves here to begin with. Their generations before, their grandparents, great-grandparents might have been part of the, you know, reason that wolves were eradicated from the state, in order to protect livestock. What we found in working with the Wood River Wolf Project, we have one of the toughest places to protect livestock anywhere in the world. It is rugged, mountainous country. We have, this last year, 18,000 sheep in our project area, and we lost 8 of them to wolves. 8. And we didn't use any lethal control of wolves at all. We're using non-lethal methods. And we hope that more people will learn about these methods, be willing to try them, because we believe that we can show that they're more effective than just killing predators, that you can actually live with them in a way that makes certain that your livestock are safe and that the wildlife are safe as well.
You can go ahead.
And I think that if you have to look at, if you are on the other side, you know, if you're a rancher and it's your cattle that you're losing mm-hmm. and you have a program or that is supposed to keep those wolves under control, you want to push that button. I mean, you feel like they ought to be protecting your cattle. You can understand that, or your sheep. And that's you know, they're not as they haven't been. They believe that we aren't doing enough. They think that the that we should kill more wolves, and they, you know, they look at that 100, and if you're one of the people who have those 100, that's your dollars. And so, you know, they either want to be compensated, or they want to they don't want it to happen.
Idaho has a long history of, you know, we've coyotes in the state. We have bears, mountain lions. Anytime there's a problem with any of those predators, ranchers typically end up killing them or having them killed. And so, you know, having that same reaction with wolves is fairly expected, except that we're finding out with science and with the research that we're doing on the non-lethal, that even with other species like coyotes and bears and mountain lions, that these non-lethal tools and methods are actually more effective if you want to protect livestock.
Do either of you think there's going to be a time when this issue is resolved, or is this tension always going to remain?
You know, I think of it like with the slavery in the United States. Generations went by afterwards where there were people that really resented having, the, you know, freed the slaves. Every time we get through a major social issue like this, there's still people that resent the change that's in place. And I don't think wolves are any different. I think once the people realize that they're just like any other type of wildlife and they've experienced living with them without all the rhetoric, without all the political battles, that they'll eventually this will calm down.
What do you think, Rocky?
Oh, I think there'll always be some level of it. But I think that I think it is a generational thing. I think the each generation that moves away from this act. Remember, they actually reintroduced Canadian wolves, and people didn't like that idea. You know, we have grizzly bears in Idaho, and those grizzly bears are moving into the exact same place that the wolves were, only they're doing it on their own. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, people are not going to like that either. But I suspect it won't be quite as hard because somebody else didn't do it to us. Mm. You know, the animals came in on their own.
And before we get going with another myth, these wolves were from Canada, but they weren't Canadian wolves. Wolves have been around in North America far longer than the Canadian border, Canadian-U.S. border. Wolves have gone from the places where we captured them in Canada, walked on their own to central Idaho and back within just a few months. These are our native wolves. They just came from Canada because we had eradicated our population.
Animals don't know there's borders.
No, they don't.
We've been talking with Suzanne Stone with the Wood River Wolf Project and Rocky Barker, special correspondent to the Idaho Statesman, talking about the 25th anniversary of wolves being reintroduced in Idaho and Yellowstone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, trying to change Idaho law regarding faith healing. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.